Hey everybody, it's me, Marcel. Thank you so much for listening to episode 3 of Giving Credits. This episode is about a position I have been excited to do so we can finally break into the G&E department. I talked to Andrew Enlow, who is a key grip and has also been a best boy grip. He's worked on many projects, including shorts and TV series, which you can see on his website at andrewenlow.wordpress.com. As always, I'll put the link in the description. And I'd like to thank everybody who has rated and left a review for us on iTunes. I'd like to give a personal shout out to Manny the Bard, Chloe, Fabio, Leanne, and whoever me times 1,000 is. I can't see the names of everyone who left a rating, but I can definitely see the names of the reviews, and it means a lot to all of us at Giving Credits. You could please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes to help us pop up more frequently so more people can get into the podcast. And that's honestly the best thing you could do for any podcast that's starting off. Anyway, thank you so much. I hope you enjoy the show, and let's give some credits. What is a key grip?
Well, a key grip works closely with the gaffer and director of photography on set. So they're going to be in charge of, once the gaffer has set the lights, they're going to be in charge of shaping the lights, whether it's with flags or diffusion, basically helping define like the quality and shape of the light.
Okay.
I joke, and the preface to all of my lovely electric brothers out there, I joke that electricians are the ones that set the lights. Yeah. And grip side, you know, we're the ones that make it pretty. So,
okay. Yeah.
You know, just a little grip side likes to throw shade when they can.
Right. Okay, cool. You work with the gaffer. We'll do an episode for gaffers to get into that, but what is that like relationship between you and the DP? Like, you guys talk and then from there you tell your team what to do and like...
Absolutely. Well, as a brief rundown, I guess, since some people may not know, gaffers, they're the chief lighting technicians that work the closest with the director of photography, typically. Mm-hmm. So they're the head electrician. They're going to make a lot of the creative decisions with the director of photography about the final photographic image that you see on screen. Yeah, the first sort of tier is the director of photography. They work closest with the director, and then we work with them to help make sure that we have the right tools, the right equipment, the right people, and that we have enough time to do what we want.
Cool.
So I guess a day-to-day is that we would arrive, if it's a shooting day, we'd arrive on set, we would prep our truck, making sure that it's as close as we can get it to set, because, I mean, a grip side especially is a lot of heavy equipment.
Right.
I mean, sandbags, C-stands, metal, track, a lot of, it's a lot of metal.
Yeah.
Which electric side has a lot of that as well. And their difficulty is theirs is a lot more fragile.
Okay.
Yeah. So obviously these departments, if they're sharing a truck or if they have two trucks, they would like to be as close to set as possible.
Yeah.
And then they find a good place to stage and offload the truck.
Right.
And then we proceed, the key grip and the gaffer, get with the director of photography, go through sort of what the day is going to look like. And then you start to move into the standard shooting schedule. Or you can block a scene, rehearse it, then light it, or block, light, rehearse, and then shoot it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you ever work with PD in any way? There's a lot of stuff that comes hand in hand with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as a producer, obviously, it's a lot of, for me, collaborative stuff. You know, I'll talk to Art and be like, well, we need to put this, and it's going to be in the way or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially during the pre-production phase.
Yeah.
So with scouting and the planning of the locations, that tends to be, at least with my experience, when production design works closest with grip side, there's a lot of stuff that can go into that, whether it's rigging up a false wall or, I mean, entirely setting up a new location. You need to plan out how that works from a lighting perspective, as well as an overall design perspective, because, I mean, we're building an entire product. It doesn't exist in a vacuum.
Yeah, totally.
So to, like, know adequately in that pre-production phase what you need, you kind of have to work with every department right. to find out, well, there may be a special stunt this day where a wall collapses.
Yeah.
And then we need to, before day of, have worked that out with stunts, if there's a person involved in the collapse,
right.
production design. It's a full family affair.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Do you mostly do TV or film? Like,
I'm not picky. Okay, cool. You know, I like to keep myself open. No, I mean, the way I like to look at it is that I am still very much learning.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that that's very important to this industry as well.
Yeah.
Is having the mindset of being open to learn.
Right.
So I'm under no assumptions that I am done learning.
Right. Okay.
And I do a lot of new media okay. stuff. Typically, when I'm jumping from project to project, I'll do a music video here and there, a commercial, and then I've done features. I think series work is my favorite to work.
Okay,
on.
I was just gonna ask, like, do you have a preference? Like...
it's a toss up because also you have to think about like the time commitment.
Yeah,
a series is going to be it's gonna run a decent amount of time for filming.
Yeah.
Which is consistent pay.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about where your next job is if you're freelance, right. which I am. I'm a freelancer, so cool. I jump from project to project
yeah.
rather than with a specific studio house or anything.
Right. Is that something that you would like to get into?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the goal is the union.
Okay.
You're required a certain number of hours per year, depending on which union you join, whether it's Grip or Electric or, mm-hmm. I mean, any of the
and
production
they're separate
groups. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 80 and 700.
Okay.
So in their similar requirements... to get into both, but yeah, that's the next step.
Yeah,
is getting into union for I think Grip Side.
Okay, cool. How did you get started with this? Like, what would you say to someone who's I'd like to give it a shot? How do I get my toe in the water?
Well, I'm a little unique in how I started out. Okay. I'm from North Carolina. I don't have the wonderful. Valley accent.
Right.
So I don't really fool anybody out here.
Yeah.
No, I'm definitely from the South. And I grew up working more on theatrical plays.
Okay.
I studied theater in high school, lighting and acting
okay.
both. Worked in theatrical stage lighting and lighting design for the entirety of my college career.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, the last few classes that I took looked into lighting for television.
Okay.
So
is
I sort of
started to know I'm gonna be a Grip.
I didn't even honestly. I knew the name.
Yeah, yeah.
Grip. But
yeah.
Even then, I didn't even have a fully fleshed out knowledge of the
right.
The production units between. So I was coming in. Very green from a film perspective.
Yeah.
It was also interesting to note that there are completely different names for everything
yeah.
in theater.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, just the way that everything's referred to, Source 4, Lico, Ellipsoidals, that's the same name. That's,
yeah.
that's one thing.
Right.
And you can go to literally anywhere across the U.S. and they could call it any of those or something else.
I mean,
there are names out there for, so learning the terminology as I went into the application process of my first film project.
Yeah.
Was a bit daunting.
Yeah. I think it's true. Like, I think a big part of it for a lot of people in film is it's the terminology. Like,
mm-hmm.
For me, it was a lot of, what is it? It's like, walk before you, it's like, oh.
Yeah, you have to crawl before you walk, and you
yeah.
have to walk before you run.
Right, or like
fake it till you make it.
Yeah. And like, I think if you can get the terminology down and at least sound like you know what you're talking about, a lot of the other stuff you'll pick up on as you go. I mean, I didn't go to film school. I don't know if there's training for being a Grip specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that's...
It would be news to me. I haven't gone to school for film. Full disclosure. I'm sorry. I'm going to lose so many jobs now. Oh, my God. I got to call my agent. No. I think that a lot of the fake it till you make it attitude
yeah.
is very helpful.
Totally.
You have to be hungry. And you have to show that you... you have the right attitude, that you have the will to learn. I think that on grip side, it can be a little dangerous sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it is, especially for grips, you're working a lot with physics.
Yeah, more so than any department.
Exactly. So you're working with the safety of a lot of departments. I mean, the key grip is typically going to be high up on the like safety rank. I mean, the safety officer on set for smaller productions may in fact be the key grip.
Yeah.
Just because there's a level of threat assessment that has to go into understanding there. But being able to sort of fake your way into it with the right knowledge is important. So the way I like to think about it is to being ready for a situation when it presents itself.
What do you like most and least about the job?
I mean, most, it might have to be the people. Hold up. We gonna make this a two-parter. All right?
Do it. Let's do it.
Part one, it's got to be the people. I love meeting new people. Mm-hmm. I love sort of looking into the mindset of different people. Yeah. I find that very interesting. So any world where you have to work closely with the same group of people for a very long period of time, you're going to learn a lot about them.
Right.
And it's like people watching times 1,000 plus a lot of those people get to be really good friends.
Right. Especially like when you work on a project that you have to go out of town with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Living in a state or a city that you've never been to.
Exactly. And actually, I worked on a project for Go90, which is Verizon's streaming service. Yeah. It's free to watch. And I did a series called Play by Play, first and second season. The first season, I was actually brought out to replace a grip that they had an issue with, but basically wound up that I was getting a call on Thanksgiving from my buddy, who was the key grip, that he needed a new Best Boy grip out there.
Okay.
And the Best Boy group, just as a heads up, Best Boys, they do managerial stuff. So they're going to do all the paperwork. They're also going to be sort of the second key grip, basically.
Yeah.
And I think that when he called me and told me, it's going to be 3 months, yada, yada, yada. Come on out. I'm like, all right, cool. Where's out? Des Moines, Iowa. Oof. Oh, what do they have out there? Corn. Okay, cool. I'll be there. But when I got out there, it was freezing cold. Yeah. We got down into like -20 with about 5.5 inches of snow, which is very difficult to film in.
Yeah, because you're moving equipment through that too.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that you have to think about, especially with the grip and electric department, I mean, with all departments when it comes to film, camera especially, is that these people are moving through the elements as well. So when you see movies like The Revenant or, I mean, anything out in the real world, there are people that have had to face these conditions. I mean, I just saw a letter that the crew received for the most recent Game of Thrones. I don't know if you're a fan.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically, it was a letter from production to the crew saying, so nobody's going to know about your 55 days you spent out in the freezing negative degrees in the wind, but they're gonna see this episode and they're gonna know, oh, that looks badass.
Right. I always talk about this one thing. You know Escape from New York?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, Snake Plissken is the man.
Absolutely. Did you know that was 73 overnights?
Wow. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, which is insane because the whole movie basically takes place at night.
Yeah.
There are no day scenes in that entire film. And when you think about it and when you're in the industry, I love talking about this.
73 overnight.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a long winter.
Yeah, okay? Exactly. Yeah. And it's obviously...
How long does it stay dark in Alaska?
I think it's 6 months.
6 months?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, exactly. So
just trying to get a frame of reference,
right,
I guess.
Right, and that's 73 over the span, I think, of 5 or 6 months. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, 2 days off and all that stuff. But your whole world is night.
Well, and that's the thing, is that a lot of people don't think that if you're working a 5-day work week, which is all 5 days are overnights.
Yeah.
If you're waking up at 6 p.m. or... let's say your 6 p.m. call. So you're going to wake up at 4 o'clock every day. Your body doesn't want to wake up at 8 a.m. on a Saturday.
Exactly.
You don't want to see the sun.
Not at all.
If you see the sun, odds are you're going to be a little irritable for the rest of the day.
Exactly.
Or the rest of the night, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that's something, too, that people see the final product. Mm-hmm. And because we are in such a media-saturated environment right now, I mean, they have no limit to what they can watch and what people can consume, which is incredible. That's a free-flowing... The free-flowing of ideas is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think it's really necessary, but there's this separation where people are starting to, not starting to, but people always have sort of taken for granted that there's creators behind the scenes. There's people that are working harder and sometimes, you know, just 10 times as hard as the people that you see on screen.
For the people on screen, typically, and I mean, they do a great job and, you know, it's, you can't discount them because we'd be setting up something for no one.
Absolutely. You know, every storyteller needs a vocalist.
Yeah, but at the same time, they get to set, they get ready for their lines, they hang out, and then while they're hanging out in the makeup room, or people are flipping the room, can you tell people what that means?
Flipping the room is the terminology for going from one setup that looks one way to another setup that may or may not look in the exact opposite direction.
Right.
And there are some productions where, due to acting constraints, because you want to make sure you're getting an authentic performance, and I don't particularly enjoy working on these, they make you flip the room for the scene multiple times over and over, which is basically doing the same work over and over again.
Yeah. Can you tell people how long that takes, more or less? Or
absolutely.
What it goes into it?
A typical lighting setup is you can maybe move into the blocking phase where everybody watches. This is assuming a stereotypical shooting schedule, which I typically like to think of as block, light, rehearse, shoot. With a little tweaking phase in between rehearsing and shooting. But basically, everybody watches the blocking. You light it, they run through it, and then you shoot that out. And theoretically, you can set it up in such a way where your camera is all on one side of the world.
Yeah.
The world being, if you imagine a stage, the proscenium.
Right.
Where the audience is sitting versus where the actors are.
Right.
You move from doing all the shots on one side, then move all of every light, every everything.
Yeah.
So that it's out of the frame, because all the space that you see on one side of the camera, if you see the other side, they had to move everything because there's a lot of gear.
And the light might need to be in a different place so that it makes sense consistently.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you have to always think about that. It's that time that you work really closely with the director of photography and someone called the script supervisor.
Yeah.
Where they're there to make sure that everything looks natural, that it's matching the last shots. And especially if you're working on a production that they're having you flip that world, the continuity aspect is something that I know I don't have the mind for. I'm so glad that there are people out there that can see everything in frame.
Yeah,
but
that's all they're thinking
exactly
about.
And all they have to think about is what's on screen, whereas I am a little bit more focused on... At the time, typically, I'm focused on making it look good to the camera. It's not necessarily what looks the exact same. It's what looks the best.
Right, right.
In part two, I think it has to be the people. You know? No. And I do mean that, but for a different reason.
Okay.
It's the egos.
Okay.
It's when egos start to get in the way of the product that... Whether it's a commercial, whether it's a music video, whether it's a series, you're always going to be working towards making a final thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully you've gotten everybody either interested in the final product or invested in how it's going to turn out. That's not always the case.
Yeah.
But when people start trying to make it their vision... Mm-hmm. And you get into sort of the auteur style of things, you get these clashes that I think are frustrating to deal with and unnecessary on set.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, you're already working closely with so many people, so to me, it's more enjoyable when you're able to focus on the work rather than what drama's going on set. Because there, more or less, there's almost always some sort of drama. That's hey, that's why the tabloids stay in business, too.
Right, yeah,
There's drama around film. I think that level of stress and people that put their egos before the project and before the planning and don't properly think things through.
Yeah.
It becomes frustrating and detrimental to everybody on the whole thing.
Yeah. Go into what kind of stress do you deal with? Like, what would be your normal, like, okay, this is what I have to deal with, but you know it's part of it.
Mm-hmm. My biggest stressors on set tend to be when other people get worked up for no reason.
Okay.
It adds a lot of stress that I tend to compound, because if I see no reason for an issue, it may become frustrating to be facing a non-issue over and over again.
Right. Is that, and would you say that's like because of miscommunication? Or?
Typically it's a miscommunication. Yeah. Nobody's out there to make the wrong decision.
Right. Yeah.
Everybody wants it to work. Everybody wants it to be awesome.
Yeah.
But either through a lack of planning or a lack of communication, it can lead to situations that are entirely preventable.
Yeah.
That slow you down quite a bit on set. Yeah. And if nothing against anybody, I'll come stand around and get paid for free. Right. If you want me to just stand there and get paid, but I won't, no offense, I won't be happy about it.
Right, right.
I'd rather be doing something.
Yeah, totally.
I think that it's more interesting that way.
Yeah.
And another thing that I love about this job is that it's never boring.
Yeah, totally.
If there's always something to do, there's always someone you can help. There is prep work to be done.
Yeah.
And being able to keep that variety is exciting.
Yeah.
But once it becomes variety due to mismanagement, it's more than a little stressing.
Working for no reason, almost.
Yep. Yeah. Working for no reason is a big stressor for me.
Okay. How do you, I think that goes into the next question pretty well. How do you organize your time?
Is this on set or in the day-to-day?
It's kind
My day-to-day is garbage. I appear places. If someone tells me to be somewhere, I'm like, all right, Ty, I'll be there usually early, but maybe right at.
Yeah. It is like a compound question where do you take your work home ever? When you're on set, is it very just like linear? Like, these are the things that, because it's very much based off of like the shooting schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Say like, okay, well, this amount of time needs to be for like moving thing. I guess we kind of started to go into it in the beginning of the day and all that.
Well, I think that for me, there are a lot of different styles and approaches to this. Everybody has their own strategy.
Yeah.
Because everybody's different and everything's going to work differently. But for me, I tend to prefer doing the work that I can as hands-on as possible.
Okay.
So I like being on set. I like working on set.
Yeah.
If I can prevent taking work home with me, I will. That being said, especially on smaller projects that maybe the budget might not be there to pay for overtime or pay for the man hours, it's a personal choice.
Yeah.
I like to take pride in what I do. I like to make the best final product. So I typically will take home work with me if it requires it. And that sort of work typically would require, whether it's plotting a light plot for the next day, planning out how much fabric you may need. So a lot of times people will be wanting to shoot a nighttime scene inside, but we want to start shooting at 4 p.m.
Yeah.
I can't pull the sun down any quicker.
Right.
What I can do is build a big tent out of duvetine and solids and block it out and let gaffers throw some lights in there.
Yeah.
So if you know that you're going to have to set that up, you have to on set or on location get measurements for all of that and sort of draw and plan everything out.
Okay.
So I would say most of the time, if I'm taking work home, it's either prepping equipment lists for the upcoming days or prepping man days, which is when production allows us to have other people on. We'll call around and try to reach out to other grips and electricians and bring them on as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
It also changes whether I'm keying or I'm besting a project. Mm-hmm. When I'm besting projects, I will typically take a lot of paperwork around with
me. Yeah.
And when I'm besting, I would expect a best boy grip or a best boy electric. So, and I would say also the approach changes whether you're keying or besting a project. So if you're the best boy grip electric or the things that you will do, such as time cards for the department or inventory for the truck or organization, that sort of lends itself to a lot more paperwork, which can build up, and you'll want to make sure you're keeping up with that throughout the week.
Yeah. I mean, we can say that the term best boy grip or electric, like, that's totally just the title. And I think, like, women still don't, in those positions, they still call themselves that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, like and typically, they tend to prefer best boy. I've worked with a female that she preferred best, just leaving it as best, which I thought was an elegant way to deal with it as well.
Totally.
But it's a relic of a bygone age, the best boy. which I always thought was who the hell is that? Yeah, whenever I'd see that credit,
yeah.
Well, now it's this loser here. but no, I think that a lot of times people don't tend to think how much has changed demographically in the film environment. I mean, just recently with the Me Too movement, it's gotten a lot of exposure about.
Yeah.
Some of the trials that females have to face in the industry, but one that isn't often really discussed in any way is the barriers of entry into the actual technical side.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you need people with experience. You need people who are strong and talented. And last I checked, that didn't tend to rest on what was between your legs. So if I can get... As long as she can work with it, has the basic knowledge, that's all that matters.
Right.
That and the drive to learn. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally feel that. Let's go into the next question.
Absolutely.
What do you think are the secrets behind getting to where you've gotten to?
Ooh, secrets. I love secrets.
Yeah.
I don't have nearly enough of them. But I'm gonna give one more out.
Okay.
Never be afraid to say no.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, go into that.
Never be afraid to say no. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to make bank, because I moved out here. I stayed with a friend of mine that I met on a single project. She knew me for literally 5 days and then invited me into her home from across the country.
Yeah.
She said, yeah, you work hard. And so, because I hated the idea, I said no, and then I stayed back in North Carolina, and I'm not here anymore, and I fade out of existence. No, but I pulled the trigger on it, and I said, yes, this is something that gets me towards where I want to be.
Yeah.
And I've worked quite a few free shows after that, once getting here, to network and grow, which I think is one of the big benefits of a film school.
Yeah.
The benefit of networking in that environment is something that can't typically be replicated, because those are your peers that want to be in that.
Yeah.
So those are, if they're going to theoretically be the future, networking with those people is important, because those are going to be the next generation of it. But after enough time in LA, you begin to see that there are those out there that love offering credit and a meal.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that.
You can you'll get a copy of it for your reel, you know, for your gaffer's reel, which is not a thing for everybody listening. No reel production typically asks for a reel for gaffers or grips.
Yeah.
That is typically a director of photography, cinematographer thing.
Yeah.
Cuz that they're holding the cameras, or
they're making the look too.
Exactly. Yeah. And I get it. Some people do. That tends to also be a red flag with me.
Yeah.
If I see credit and a copy for your reel and a free meal, we can't pay you, but it's great exposure.
Right.
After time, and after you've sort of really learned a little bit, don't be afraid to know your worth.
Right. Yeah.
Especially in this industry. Yeah. Because, like I said, there are egos out there that don't see beyond themselves, and they're going to try to take advantage of that.
Yeah, totally. On Facebook, I'm part of maybe 3 or 4 groups to get paid gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And I still see on some of them that they're going to pay either very, very, very low, or they're just trying to, we'll give you exposure, like you said, credit, which is,
like,
know.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you're going to give me credit on this thing I worked on?
Right, yeah.
I thank you.
Yeah, when you start getting paid gigs, that's not even a question.
No.
No one says anything like that.
And it's sad that it should even be a question exactly. on an unpaid gig.
Yeah, it's true.
But that's something that is very frustrating because people tend to think maybe it's because artists are misunderstood.
Right.
But everybody tends to think, oh, well, they're an artist. They should be grateful that they get to work with my vision or something like that. And this is an expensive city.
It is.
And not everywhere is expensive. If you're working on projects outside of LA, there are cheap alternatives to make projects that you can enjoy.
Yeah.
But knowing when you can confidently say no, or when a situation may be toxic, is, I think, just an important life advice in general.
Yeah, you can put that with anything.
Yeah, but I think especially in this industry, being able to say no confidently can often get you jobs as well.
Yeah, because I think people forget that these are 12-hour days.
Oh, absolutely.
This isn't 9 to 5. It's not 8 hours. It's you're going to give 12 hours a day, how many days a week, and driving to a location that might be far, have a lot of traffic or something.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that go into it that makes things not worth it if it's not going to get you either to your next step, which is my next question.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next step for you?
Oof, the next step for me, I'm just going to keep hustling. I mean, I think it's just keep going. I'm not established in such a way. I think the next big step is probably going to be union.
Okay.
I would love to get into union for, and I'm still tossed up between Grip and Electric. I'm also taking a few acting classes like everybody else in LA, you know. I love acting. It's always been a passion of mine. And as long as I've done lighting, I've done acting.
Yeah.
So maybe foray into that forest a little bit and see what it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, and you could always do both. Like, you could do theater acting on like, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, or get into a short or
And
feature.
Theater is where most of my expertise lies. Yeah. And that would be a natural stepping stone. But I don't know. Another thing about me is I like being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, you moved here.
Yeah, I still don't know how I did that. I drove a PT Cruiser across the U.S. It's dead right now, parked on the side of Colfax. But it got me here. It got me here.
Nice.
But that's the thing. It's just you being ready to sort of take those risks is important, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to ask you one question, and then that's going to lead into the next one. How do you push through your worst times?
I'm a fairly optimistic person.
Okay.
I don't typically like dwelling on issues that may arise. I like solving things. And if I can't, that's when I tend to get frustrated.
Yeah.
So whenever that happens, I think that stepping away from a situation, acknowledging if it cannot be helped at that point, if there's nothing that you can do, sort of stepping away and making peace with the fact that there are going to be obstacles no matter what on any occupation, but realizing that that doesn't fall squarely on my shoulders is a big thing. Being able to accept that we are human, these are our limitations.
Totally.
That's been sort of what gets me through most things.
Cool. And then the next question is, what is your worst gig ever?
Ooh, worst gig. All right, I don't have a worst gig. I'm very loving of most of the things that I've done.
Okay.
And in fact, the worst gig experience that I've ever had was actually with a group of people that I love very dearly and would not be out here without.
Yeah.
I was gaffing a little project for a friend of mine named Alicia Herder. You may know her.
I do, yes.
You do? Okay. and Kelly Urban, who she's also appeared on your podcast as well. I was gaffing for them for a thesis project shot in Indiana, Muncie, Indiana. Lovely now, Muncie. It really is. Yeah. Coming from the Piedmont of North Carolina, I thought it was quaint. It was my speed.
It's kind of familiar too, right?
And whether you've been there or not, yeah. too, which is weird. It's like,
yeah, because like I've driven
sort of Stepford town wise. Yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah, just,
yeah. Oh, like, I've never been here, but yeah, I've been here.
Right. Like, and I know that I'm interjecting, but it's just I remember driving in Indiana, mm-hmm. and I'm like, this reminds me of driving through northern Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I think maybe Muncie, Indiana, maybe a portal between worlds. Probably, I don't. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's just one of those shifting environments.
Yeah.
But the reason that I think it's a portal between worlds, sorry, I'm having flashbacks. We were filming, I think it was our next to last day filming, and I say day, but we were filming overnights.
Yeah.
It was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and we were filming downstairs in a party scene, which it's for a project called Good Girl. Check it out. Hopefully it should be... it's on Seed and Spark, and I don't know what the release stuff is, so I'm going to stop talking about it. But it's dope if you get to see it. Anyway, we were filming the night party scene, and the rain starts coming down from outside. I can deal with rain, but this is a torrential downpour.
Yeah.
This is a lot of rain. And then all of a sudden, we hear a voice around the corner of the hallway say, should that be doing that? Needless to say, no, the toilet should not be spewing brown ooze out of it and all into the hallway and set and kitchen and bedroom and floor we were staying on and yada, yada, yada. Whoo! So we're trying to film because we only have the house for one more night.
Yeah.
So we grab a big pile of clothes that was the homeowners who we tried to get a hold of. It was trash. It was all old trash clothes, stuff they were looking to get rid of. So, but we used all of that to create a sort of barrier to prevent the poo water from, which looking back, it's straight backflow from the sewage. The rain had basically overflowed the sewage system and forced it up through the nearest exit, which happened to be on the toilet on our set.
Yeah.
So I eventually had to tell everybody, look, this is getting way out of hand. I'm gapping on this, so I'm doing electrical work. There are electrical lines everywhere. Yeah. And I tell them, look, this house was built in the 40s. The circuits are not built to trip in a real safe way.
Yeah.
I'll flip this. It says it turns off the downstairs bathroom, but the lights upstairs went off, so who knows what these circuits are doing now. We gotta call it quits.
Yeah.
So I had to call it that night, and luckily we had a few of, I want to make it clear as well, this is not typically in the purview of the key grip department.
Yeah.
Grip side is not normally the ones to handle literal feces on, I think what it might department? Be transpo.
Yeah.
I think it's transpo. Sorry, transpo guys. But no, anyway, I think that, luckily a few guys came back. I told them, I was like, look, you're volunteering to help anyway. You don't have to clean up poop. I'm going to be sleeping down here, though, by this, so I'm going to clean it up.
Yeah.
So they came out, they helped, and we ended up getting everything we needed the next day, which was awesome. We started filming a little bit earlier. I just did the tent thing, but... yeah, the only thing that I think I really got out of it, other than a great appreciation for plumbers, is the shitty rigs photo that I decided to take, which made the rounds on, if you're not familiar, it's a sort of a meme sort of thing. Shitty rigs, people will post rigs of that they've made on set, whether it's a really poorly planned out car dolly or like a guy standing on a ladder on another ladder like on a dolly or something. I had to grab a C-stand and like plunge a plunger with like three sandbags on top to like hold it down. That stymied the flow for a little bit, but it overtook. Eventually we were able to actually get the homeowner there to shut off the water because no one could find the shutoff. Even the emergency plumbers that beat the homeowner there couldn't find where to shut off the water. It was hilarious after the fact.
Right, no, totally. I remember seeing that picture and I was like, this seems like a fun set.
Oh, it was an absolute blast. It was a blast.
Yeah.
Also, my crew was awesome on that. They were fairly green. They were students,
yeah.
Which is, I love it. They were ready to learn. They kept asking me like questions. Yeah. I felt like a teacher. I was like, oh, cool, tight. Yeah, I felt like I should have like a tweed sweater or
something.
Yeah,
with like the elbow
yeah,
patches.
With the elbow pads.
Yeah.
But they gave me a card at the end of it with that picture on it.
Oh, nice.
And I opened it up and it just said, you're the shit. So that was sweet. I kept that. I still have that nice. Up in my room.
That's
so.
Very sweet.
Yeah.
Cool. Who would you love to work with given the opportunity?
Maybe I'm biased because I'm a huge nerd and sure. I just saw it for the third time. But if I could do the next Avengers, you know, you guys give me a call. I think I could be free, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. I would love to do something a little bit more colorful and on green screens.
Yeah.
I've worked on chroma keying a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but the level of production value on those major studios, I mean, it's Marvel, it's Disney,
yeah.
you know what you're expecting,
right.
but I just think that would be a ton of fun to be able to be around all those consummate professionals and really soak all that in. Because also, my idea is that surrounding yourself that are with people that are better than you is the only way to really improve.
Yeah.
Because it forces you to do that. It's just another way, I guess, to make yourself uncomfortable.
Right. I mean, that's something I've talked about before in episode one. I always try to be either the dumbest or least talented person in a room. Because then I can only absorb, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I can only just grow from there. That's always my thing, is just...
The trick is not looking like it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I'll know the secret no one else knows. But yeah, cool. It's really also for you working on projects for content that you love. Projects that maybe have, like, a good connection for you.
Mm. Yeah, I think that projects that can offer me some sort of growth, something that I haven't done... I'm going to be hard-pressed to say no to.
Yeah.
I don't typically live in the realm of, like, visualizing a specific goal, like, a specific fantasy goal, I guess.
Yeah.
I can say, oh, I'd love to work on the next Marvel picture, but in all reality, I think that my next biggest dream is to just get to something that's going to push me to be better.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as I'm having fun... learning, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. So what would be the difference between key gripping or gripping in general for a real green screen production versus... I haven't done any green screen productions,
mm-hmm.
so I haven't really seen what the differences are in lighting.
Yeah, green screens come with a lot of benefits along with, I mean, obviously it's a lot of limitations as well. You have to make sure you have the room for it. You're going to need to separate lighting, both of those, especially if you're like electric side, gaffing side. They're going to have to focus more on that lighting side of it, making sure it's well lit.
Yeah.
Has to be smooth, etc. But with grip side, you're going to be focused on actually building out the frames for those screens. So working with... a production for AMC's horror network called Shudder.
Mm-hmm.
I recently got to work on a green screen stage that was also a motion capture stage.
Oh, cool.
And they had a bunch of little cameras everywhere with little IR sensors for detecting of the like motion capture balls. We weren't doing any of the motion capture stuff, but they also had frames built so that you could start to string up along wherever you needed to, the walls of 20 by 12s or whatever size green screen you have, and making sure that it provides you enough room to separate your talent and your subject from green screen, because you have to get that distance. Otherwise, you're going to get a lot of green bounce back on the talent. And if you get that green bounce, it becomes a lot less clean in the editing room to actually put what they want there.
Are there any other challenges from filming on like green screen, like for your department?
For my department in particular, it tends to be a planning nightmare a lot of times. It's a lot of pre-planning, and if it hasn't been pre-planned well, then you're going to run into problems all day. You absolutely have to green screen requires usually a decent amount of hands if it's a setup day.
Really? So more hands than...
Wow. More hands to set up, because you're going to be working with a lot of frames, a lot of equipment with moving. And I mean, that changes on like day two. If you're filming in the same location of a green screen, you've built most everything. So you can go back down to two people or whatever.
Okay.
But the initial setup is a lot more.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So whereas shooting on location, you have a lot of setups going on in between.
Yeah.
You may not have as many setups in a studio doing green screen work, but the initial setup is going to take a lot more time, but save a lot more in that you're not, hopefully, moving around as much.
Right, right. Wow, okay. Yeah, I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm. That's what it all comes down to: equipment, personnel, and time.
Yeah, at the end of the day, right?
At the end of the day, if you can match exactly what you need for all three of those, you're going to have a smooth day.
Yeah. All right, this one I haven't asked before, but I'm very interested. If you were going to change direction now, where would you go? How would you do it? And that could be in film, like if you were going to hard pivot to a different department, which one would you be interested in working in? I think that'd be a fun...
Okay. Well, if I'm doing a hard pivot by department, I'm going to do acting.
Acting?
I'm going straight to acting.
Okay.
I mean, come on. They get trailers. No, but like, honestly, I think that's also where I have the most experience beyond lighting as well.
Yeah.
If I wasn't allowed to act, or if somebody told me, you know, kid, you're no Chris Evans, but you know, move on, then I guess I'd be a sound guy.
Oh, okay.
I started out sound, but if I wasn't allowed to do acting, I guess I would probably do sound. Wow. I started out with sound when I did my first play, and by did my first play, I mean like teching my first project ever in high school. Like, it was a high school role play. It wasn't anything crazy, but I enjoyed working with the soundboard. I find acoustics fascinating.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, so that's probably where I'd be.
I recently, for my first time ever, I was like ACing.
Oh yeah, yeah. ACing is tough. I mean, first ACing can be tough. Second ACing should be easier.
Yeah.
If the first AC is doing their job, which should then make the DP's job
that
much easier.
Right.
That's what it all comes down to, is like making it as... Also, that's a good way to get jobs in the industry as well.
Yeah.
Keeping in mind that if you can make your boss's job easier,
said
boss is going to keep wanting to bring you on.
Yeah, totally.
Like my buddy Jake, who I met on a UCLA project that I worked for free for a week in Utah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was a tough shoot. It was a gorgeous environment out near the Mars Desert Research Station in Utah.
Yeah.
And basically led to every major job I've gotten since. Yeah, I think that, and I wouldn't have done it had I not agreed to go do this free week.
Yeah.
And he saw that I was ready to make his life easy on set.
Yeah.
So I worked my butt off, and then afterwards he's like, yeah, come work with me on such and such. And I guess I kept showing him that I can make his life easier. Because if you can make somebody's life easier on set,
That's
you're in. You're in.
Yeah, I like that. Cool. What do you see as the major problems for those working in this field today in your department?
I think I'm going to talk a little bit more generally towards like film in general. There's this sort of self-importance that I think a lot has been developed over the years, that every idea that is unique has validity. I think that's sort of dangerous in a way.
And I
think that the biggest problems for those working in the field today would have to be maintaining an open mindset to any new possibilities, for whether it's new ways to do things, new people to bring into the field. We're storytellers. I mean, that's the grand version of what we are. A lot of times it's commercial too. I mean, which, like, if you're shooting a commercial, that's not even a story. That's not typically even storytelling.
Right.
But the way I like to think about it is that being able to open up to other experiences, other viewpoints, can only create more interesting projects and more well thought out projects.
Totally.
I think that being able to open up to any and all new experiences and people, in the industry, whether it's bringing them into your crews, can typically only benefit.
Yeah.
I mean, don't just hire people for diversity's sake or anything, but be open to the people that you might not really normally work with or might not normally talk with, because they've heard different stories than you.
Yeah, and they'll bring something new to it, and that's always how we expand, I think. Yeah.
Hey, I grew up as one of the kids hearing that America was a melting pot, so I like to see that where I can.
Yeah, I feel that. From Miami, LA, I mean, it's not...
Yeah. That'll do it.
Right, exactly. Cool, so I think we're running out of time, but do you have any plugs you want to do?
I'm not much of a plugger. Like I said, I don't have my gaffers reel. Yeah. But no, as far as me, you can check me out at andrewenloe.wordpress.com. That's just spelled Andrew, E-N-L-O-E, .wordpress.com. I tend to update it with just various little projects that I can find on YouTube that I've done.
Like
music videos, etc. I'll compile them all there. I also have a link to Play by Play, which has one season out already. The next season's coming out later this year. It's a sitcom-y sort of family friendly show. It's a lot of fun, really funny, free to watch online as well.
Awesome.
Yep.
Thanks so much for doing this.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Marcel. Thank you.